I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw on my first show of the week, SmackDown with my second show of the week, and then the Flagship Edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. I am your host, Mike Grocki, and I will soon be joined by my two co-hosts, Sean Ennis and Robert Vallejos. But first, we'd like for you to be part of today's show as well. So if you have a question or comment, give us a call. The phone number is 515-605-9345. Again, the phone number to call is 515-605-9345. If you prefer to email the show, the email address to use is pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. All right, I am now going to bring on my two co-hosts, Sean and Robert. Sean, is that you?
I am here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. Going to bring Robert in now. Robert, is that you?
That's me.
All right. All right, so welcome to the show, guys. Sean, you've actually been out on vacation for the past 2 weeks, so I figured I'd give you an opportunity to kind of go back and give us your thoughts on UFC 214 and specifically John Jones versus Daniel Cormier.
Yeah, it feels like it was so long ago, doesn't it? The event itself was fantastic. I mean, the welterweight title fight notwithstanding, it was a great night of fights. Specifically in the main event, you know, the thing that surprised me the most, I think, about that fight was that Cormier was doing so well up until the time when, you know, he wasn't. You know, he was able to hit Jones several times. He obviously knocked his mouthpiece early, knocked his mouthpiece out early, was able to connect a lot with what he was throwing, was walking right through a lot of the shots that Jones was putting on him, and I was pretty surprised by that. And I thought, you know, after the first couple rounds, I was thinking, man, Cormier might just pull this thing off. And even into the third round a little bit, you know, right up until that head kick, I'm thinking Cormier is doing really well. But then, of course, you can't leave any windows with John Jones. You can't make any mistakes when you're at that level. And we see it time and time again with these elite fighters. When you've got two elite fighters in there, you just can't make any mistakes. There's no room for error, and that's what happened there. And as far as, you know, the implications for the division, I mean, obviously you have John Jones, who was in many people's eyes the uncrowned champion, now back on top. Whether that remains to be a troubled reign, you know, and he gets back off and on his extracurricular activities and gets in more trouble, that remains to be seen. But I think it definitely restores a sense of order to the light heavyweight division, which has kind of been the marquee division for the UFC. So it's hard to say that that's a bad thing, and especially with you know, with this kind of blood feud that Jones and Cormier had kind of coming to an end. You get a definitive end to that, even though a trilogy might have been nice. You get a definitive end to that, and you get kind of Jones there waiting for his next challenger, whether that's Brock Lesnar or not, I'm sure we'll talk about later on. But as for the rest of the show, Tyron Woodley, Damian Maya was pretty awful, and not sure that's really up for argument, quite honestly. It was, you know, Woodley was setting records for lack of aggression, for lack of a better term, you know, just not doing anything at all. And, you know, I don't know whether he thinks that stopping offense is offense in and of itself. You know, he landed just barely enough punches to kind of call it a night against Maya, you know, and, you know, Maya does play a part in that as well. I mean, this is now two of the worst title fights that we've ever seen, probably between him fighting Woodley and Anderson Silva. So that's frustrating in and of itself, especially with how dynamic Maya can be when he's doing what he wants to do. And then, of course, you've got Christiane Cyborg doing what she does against Tonya Evinger, who did not look like she belonged at 145. So it'll be interesting to see what she can do at bantamweight in the UFC. Lawler Cerrone, I thought, would have been even more awesome if it went five rounds. Volkan Ozdemir, the kind of power that he seems to have in close range is pretty incredible. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he does next. You know, Jimmy Manoa is not a guy who is easy to knock out, you know, despite what Alexander Gustafsson did to him. It's not like this guy has been, you know, known for a glass jaw or anything like that, and he's got dynamite in his fist too. So it's, you know, Ozdemir is one of those guys where he keeps having these quick fights, and you got to wonder what's going to happen when he gets into a kind of a battle of attrition. But, you know, it's, I mean, obviously he went to a decision with Owen St. Preux, and he's been in decisions before, but like these last couple of fights, both under a minute and both just shots that you barely even see, that just put guys out. It's pretty interesting. So, looking forward to see what he does next. Other than that, you know, nothing major coming out of the card as far as newsworthy fights, but still overall from top to bottom, just a great card.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was a really fun card to watch. Did you ever get the sense that Cormier was the rightful champion, or was it always, you know, just a matter of time before he lost it back to Jones? You know, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I feel bad saying that that he wasn't the rightful champion. I think he was, just because Jones was gone for so long. But at the same time, it never really felt like he was an undisputed champion, if that makes sense. You know, if he could be rightful champion without being undisputed, that was the niche that Cormier fell into, because everyone knew that Cormier was great. I mean, there was no disputing that. But everyone also knew that he lost pretty decisively to John Jones the first time around. So it's not as if it was like a Johnny Hendricks, George St. Pierre thing where, you know, Johnny Hendricks went out and won that title after George St. Pierre retired. And, you know, he had just, basically, in my eyes anyway, in the eyes of many, had beaten George St. Pierre by decision in GSP's last fight. And so when he goes out there and wins the welterweight title in his next fight, you know, in to get the vacant belt, it didn't feel like he was a placeholder. It didn't feel like, well, if GSP comes back, you know, he's going to restore order to things. Whereas with Cormier, you know, it was a pretty decisive loss to Jones. And it wasn't as if Jones then retired or anything like that. It was, you know, not voluntary that he was gone for so long. So, I do think that a division without Jones, you know, there's little disputing that Daniel Cormier is the number two guy in the world. And it didn't feel like a violation of sorts to have him on top of the division. But at the same time, there was always kind of this sense of foreboding, sense of looming doubt that Cormier was actually the guy. So, you know, and is that fair to him? It's maybe not. But at the same time, it's hard to dispute that he always kind of lived in the shadow of John Jones.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Robert, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to just delegitimize Cormier's championship reign. I mean, I've heard some people compare him to like the Houston Rockets of the 90s in the NBA, that, you know, he was the champion when the GOAT was gone. And I don't think that's fair, because Jones didn't get beat, but Jones took himself out of the picture by his own decisions. So, I mean, the way that that Jones has said, Cormier is a legitimate champion. Now, nobody in their right mind would ever say he was ever better than John Jones. That's just not – the facts have proven that out twice on two different occasions. We saw the very best Daniel Cormier has to offer, and he still wasn't good enough to beat John Jones. But, yeah, he is a legitimate champion. It just – unfortunately, he's a champion in the time when John Jones is in his prime.
Yeah, right. I agree with that. So keeping with the subject of John Jones, with this ongoing fight that looks like it's probably going to happen with Brock Lesnar at some point. He was just on Good Morning America, and on there he said it may be a while before Brock Lesnar is eligible to fight. Right now, I'm just waiting to hear from the office, or I'm waiting to hear from the UFC on some different ideas outside of him. So I found that kind of interesting. I got the sense that he was kind of in limbo right now, because from what I'm hearing, the Brock Lesnar fight wouldn't be until possibly after WrestleMania. I'm not sure what you guys are hearing, but you find it a little odd that he doesn't have anything lined up, because if you ask me, it seems like a no-brainer to book him against Gustafson. Robert, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, Gustafson's the fight that makes sense, obviously. I think this seems to be a case where the UFC circle and UFC fans and maybe even John Jones didn't account for WWE's role in Brock Lesnar actually fighting. I think there seems to have been this assumption that as soon as he could serve out the rest of his USADA suspension, he's good to go, which would in theory work if he wasn't actually employed or subcontracted to another company. And I think that kind of has thrown everything off the rails a little bit, where Jones is changing his tune for the first time. I'm not completely buying it yet, though. I think that if the UFC can book something in the middle before then, that they are content with keeping Jones on ice. Yes, the Gustafson fight makes sense. But let me just say this. The Gustafson fight does not derail Brock versus Bones. I mean, if that happened at the end of the year, it's very easy in the summer for Jones to once again fight Lesnar. And the result to me doesn't even really matter, because Jones and Lesnar, this kind of like kooky super fight that a title doesn't really matter. I mean, he'd be fighting at heavyweight anyway, so it really wouldn't matter what the result of Gustafson and Jones are. I think we already know that Gustafson, at one point in time, had the skills to take out Jones. It's going to be a big shocker, although I'm sure the UFC wouldn't want Jones to take a loss so soon after he came back.
Yeah. Sean, what do you think?
Yeah, I actually agree on all counts. I think, the easy fight to make here is Jones-Gustafson. Gustafson is obviously the guy that took Jones to the limit more than anybody else. You know, absent a Anthony Johnson, who's on fire, you know, obviously he's quote-unquote retired right now and lost his last fight. So it's not as if we need to get that fight right up right now. But Gustafson is the fight that makes sense. And even like you said, even if he loses that fight, it's not as if, that has any implications on a Lesnar fight. You know, a Lesnar-Jones fight would be a super fight without a title. If such a thing can exist, it would exist between those two, and it's a heavyweight anyway, like Robert said. So, I think it makes sense, all sense in the world, to book him against Gustafson.
I agree. And I just worry, because the way the UFC seems to be booking their fights nowadays, I'm almost getting the sense like doing what's the right thing to do isn't always necessarily, you know, what they think is the right thing to do. If they're looking for big money fights, do you think that they're possibly maybe weighing options as far as Jones may be fighting a different heavyweight, not necessarily Stipe, but I know there's some rumblings about that as well. Do you think they go that route, or do they do the right thing and really do what keep the division moving forward with Gustafson? John, go ahead.
It's hard to say, because There's an argument to be made that John Jones doesn't need to stay at light heavyweight now. I think the issue is, if they were to move him to heavyweight to fight, whoever they put him against, whether it's Stipe, whether it's Cain Velasquez, whether it's whoever, if they were to make that move, would they then say, well, he's vacating the light heavyweight title, and we'll have a light heavyweight title fight? Or do they say it's a one-off, like Anderson Silva used to do, he goes up, moves up the division and comes back? Is it that kind of thing? I think it kind of depends on that. Is John Jones going to be real active, and it's not going to be, one of those things where it's a Conor McGregor situation and he goes up and, wins the heavyweight title and never comes back to light heavyweight, but ends up getting stripped, and doesn't want to get stripped. Is it a mess like that, or is it something where there's some structure to it and, he's going up to heavyweight, here's what that means? I think that makes all the difference in how it's presented.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I agree. Okay, with that, we're going to take our first break, and when we come back, we'll get into some discussion around the Conor McGregor camp and what's happening over there. So we will be right back.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too, and if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
All right, we are back. So I'm sure you guys have heard the things that have been happening in the Conor McGregor camp, specifically with his sparring partner. Some of the things that Paulie has come out and said after their breakup here is McGregor is arrogant to the point where he can't progress. He also said McGregor whimpers like a girl when he gets punched in the body. What do you guys make of this, Robert? Do you think this is sour grapes? Do you think there's some validity to it? Where do you think this is going, and how do you think this affects McGregor going forward?
Yeah, I think it's somewhere in the middle. If you heard Paulie earlier today on the MMA Hour, he really is just angry at McGregor for a lot of things. I think the photo is actually the thing he's least angry about. I think he sort of viewed McGregor as a guy who was really trying to use him, and he even referred to McGregor, the house he put him in, as like a dilapidated crack house, which I thought was hilarious. But it seems to speak that McGregor has this thing, especially his McGregor on social media, kind of keeps a kayfabe to him that never really gets interrupted because nobody else you ever see in these photos is also a public figure. Well, Paulie's a public figure, and so when he disputed anything that happened, it seems like the mud just started slinging. But I don't think this affects McGregor in any way. Look, Paulie telling us that McGregor with a 0-0 boxing record is a novice boxer, that's not breaking news. Now, there are the McGregor sycophants that just, you know, eat up everything the guy says or does. So they are disputing this, like, so vehemently. But I think it's a lot of ado about nothing. I think part of it is Paulie is trying to get a little bit of attention off of this because with his fallout with the camp, he kind of loses that relevancy that he had. So, look, Paulie's been like the most visible boxer in the news over the last week or so, and that's no small task on his behalf. I think this is it's interesting, it's fun, but it's a lot of ado about nothing. It has no impact on how Mayweather McGregor is actually going to play out.
Yeah, Sean, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's 100% right. You know, this is not exactly something that we didn't know, that McGregor is a novice boxer. And, you know, I think time will prove that he is not a very good boxer. You know, when he actually goes to fight Floyd Mayweather, I think we'll see that that reports of him being bad at boxing are not exaggerated. I may be wrong, but I don't think I am. So, you know, yeah, I think he's going after McGregor. He's wanting to stay in the news. He's being visible right now. He's probably angling for a fight with McGregor afterwards because, you know, it's obviously a fight that would get a lot of publicity and a fight that he would probably win. So there's no downside for him on being visible, whether what he's saying is valid or not. And I think it probably mostly is.
Yeah, I mean, Paulie has come out and really kind of put it to McGregor verbally. He said McGregor treats his sparring partners poorly. And he does have some insight as far as, you know, where McGregor's skill sets are currently. He did mention that, you know, he thinks he's going to have a hard time making up the technical gap that exists between him and Mayweather. And like you guys said, you know, I don't think that is a shock to anybody. Where I think it will be interesting is, you know, in the commentary during the fight. You know, I think Paulie can go back and, you know, take from, you know, his sparring sessions and see, you know, what the finished product is on fight night. Do you think this is going to hurt McGregor in any way, this fallout with Paulie? Sean, what do you think?
I think it'll be completely forgotten in a couple of weeks, you know, especially by fight night. You know, when the fight gets closer, no one's going to be talking about any of this stuff. It's going to be all, you know, all the trash talk and all the hype and all that kind of stuff. I think this will be completely forgotten. So, no, I don't think it's going to hurt at all.
Robert?
yeah, I don't think it's going to have any effect. Mayweather, excuse me, McGregor's very good at sort of changing the narrative very quickly. You know, he says so much stuff that throws, you know, the media this way or that way or the other way. So, you know, by the time you have time to process something, he's going to have something else out there. So I don't think it's going to really have any impact on his drawing power or anything like that.
Yeah, I don't think so either. As far as I know, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves here, but as far as pay-per-view buys, where do you guys find this one coming in at? Say, if we put 4.5 as the measuring stick, you think it comes in above or below that, Robert?
Slightly above. I don't think this is going to be, you know, some of the projections that have been thrown out there, I think, are a little ridiculous, because I don't think you don't just add the biggest UFC audience with the biggest boxing audience, and that doesn't equal your equation, because there is some crossover there. So you're not gonna be doubling that. I think we're gonna get slightly over, maybe in the five. What did Pacquiao Mayweather do?
I think it was 4.5.
4.5. Okay, so I see it as a very similar. That price point is big, and it might have hurt the UFC 214 buy rate. But I think it's going to be just that slight bit over. I don't think they're going to go into this extra, you know, 6 or 7 that some people have thrown out.
Yeah, I agree. Sean, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm with you, too. I think that price point is going to be a consideration there. You know, it's not going to deter a lot of people from buying it, but I think it's going to lead to more people watching it together. You know, if we're comparing it to Mayweather-Pacquiao, you know, I think it probably does beat Mayweather-Pacquiao. Only because, you know, you have the MMA fan who doesn't typically buy a boxing pay-per-view going after that. And probably, you know, about half of Ireland is going to get it, too. So you've got that going for you as well.
Yeah, I agree. I see this going over the 4.5 mark, only because I think this fight is doing a better job of grabbing the casual fan, whether it be MMA or boxing. I think there's more people interested in that. So speaking of buy rates, UFC 214 numbers came in, and it looks like they did around 850,000. Is this more or less than what you guys expected? Sean, we'll start with you.
That's less than I thought it was going to do. I figured, you know, and I'm, you know, full disclosure, I'm not very good at estimating pay-per-view buys, but I figured it would do a million with the way that Jones and Cormier were going at each other, you know, and the coverage that was getting. I thought that would do pretty well. I mean, surely the UFC is not disappointed with an 800,000 number. I think the projections were right around there, if I'm not mistaken, but I thought it would do more.
Yeah, Dana White mentioned he thought it would do around a million. Robert, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's probably about where I thought it would be. I thought it would be, you know, over the 500,000, but less than a million. So I think that falls right where it goes. Look, the card was a great card, but it didn't necessarily have like that transcendent star that the million pay-per-view buys do. It didn't have Rousey, McGregor, Lesnar on there. So when you think about those massive pay-per-views, those ones that really bring in, we talk about the casual audience, but there's an even audience that I think is a little deeper than that never buys pay-per-views, that buys the cards that those guys are on. And this card, while it was the most stacked MMA card of the year, it didn't have any of those guys. And if you look at John Jones, I mean, I think he's a much bigger star now than he was after UFC 214. But I've gone back and looked at his pay-per-view numbers on cards where he's not opposite Chael Sonnen or Daniel Cormier. He tends to do the sub 500 mark. So it doesn't necessarily surprise me. And I wonder, too, how much two things factored in. One, we just talked about that price point for Mayweather-McGregor. That's $100, you know, next month. Look, we write about MMA. We get all the pay-per-views. It's kind of what we do. That's a lot of money to be adding to your cable bill, you know, so close together. The second thing is, I wonder how much of a trust issue there really was with John Jones selling a pay-per-view. Look, people got really excited for UFC 200, and then some people got burned by John Jones. So I wonder if there's a little bit of a maybe a grace period or a probationary period that the UFC audience has to go through before they can really trust to buy a Jones pay-per-view. With that said, 800,000, nobody's going to cry about that.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that. Yeah, I mean, you kind of touched on it a little bit, Robert. You know, aside from your Brock Lesnar's, Ronda Rousey's, you know, Conor McGregor's, I mean, is that really the only three that are going to draw big numbers at this point in the UFC and pay-per-view landscape? Because this was a really loaded card, and I actually thought it would creep a little bit closer to that million mark. So I was a little bit surprised because, like I said, it was such a good card. You know, is this kind of just where we are now? It's only going to take those, you know, those three really for the most part to really get that up to a million buys. Would you guys agree or disagree with that?
I mean, I think you have to kind of look at this as your ceiling at this point without one of those, you know, transcendent stars on the card, because how do you stack a card more than you stack this one? You know what? I don't know that there's any hotter feud, but there was any hotter feud around than Jones Cormier, and they had that on the top of the card plus two other title fights, you know, and I don't know how you make a more intriguing card than that to the general public without your Lesnar, your McGregor, your Rousey, one of those guys. So, yeah, I think this is probably where they're at right now. Unless this has turned John Jones into one of those draws, I'm not sure that it has, unless he fights Brock Lesnar. But I think this kind of has to be what the UFC is looking at now, as, you know, this is what we can do when we stack the deck.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. So, all right, let's go to a caller. Let's see who we have here. 818.
Hey guys,
you're on the line. State your name and the town you're calling from.
Hey guys, this is Rick from Alaska. Calling in. I didn't have anything specific I want to talk about, but you guys are talking about the pay-per-view, the Conor McGregor and whatnot, and I just want to give a tip to all those people. If you're worried about the fact that you don't have Showtime and it's a Showtime pay-per-view, UFC TV is going to broadcast it like they do other pay-per-views. And so if you guys don't have enough money to go to, you know, because we're showing this fight in the movie theaters for $40 a person, which is pretty expensive. And otherwise, you know, if you have the group of friends or you have the way you watch normal pay-per-views, you can still do that in theory with this pay-per-view. So at least there's that, you know. You don't have to find a new outlet to buy something that you want to see.
Yeah, I didn't even know that it was $40 to go watch it at a movie theater. Is that something that, you know, will draw interest from people? I mean, what are you hearing about that?
Well, I've checked out to see how the tickets are doing, and they're almost sold out. I'm from Alaska, but I live in LA right now, and it's doing gangbuster business as far as, I mean, in Burbank, the theater's completely sold out. You know, I mean, Universal, it's sold out. So those UFC does events do Fathom a lot, and they typically do good, but they're not that expensive. And that doesn't include the prelims. It's just the 6 o'clock show, you know, national anthem.
Oh, wow.
And people are paying that much. So that's pretty crazy. You know, if you and three other people go, that's, you know, a lot of money. That's well over $100. And that doesn't include booze.
Right.
That's just you in the seat. So I thought that was kind of, at least if you order it through the app, you get it for 24 hours and all that good stuff. So just want to make sure the audience knows that don't have to go get Showtime for a month, just order their pay-per-view.
Yeah, we appreciate it, Rick. Thank you. Do you have anything else for us?
Well, yeah, I just want to say the Mexico card was fun to watch besides Rashad Evans. I know you guys will get into that in a bit, but that's one I was willing to skip, you know, and I DVR'd it. And by the time I was like, I'll just catch a couple fights. And by the time it was over, I was caught up with the live feed because it was just, you know, it's just like UFC is, it's always like every card that you guys, you know, think is going to be great sometimes doesn't live up to the hype. And then these little cards like the Mexico one where you're like completely going to skip it turns out to be one of the most exciting cards of the year, except for Rashad Evans. So you never know what
right.
you're going to get. Anyways, I love
sure.
the show and keep it going. Thank you, guys.
Thanks,
all right. Thanks for calling, Rick. Call again.
Cool.
All right. So, yeah, with that smooth transition there, let's get into UFC Fight Night 114. Robert, I know you covered the prelims for MMATorch.com. We saw 7 finishes, which I think tied or broke a record. I think it broke a record. But what were your takeaways while covering the prelims? What stood out to you most?
Well, you know, anecdotally, from the first time I ever covered a fight card, that was the easiest prelims ever to cover because the fights were all so short. It was, you know, I was really preparing myself for this night of really hard work, and it was like before I had even write my first sentence, the fight would be over, and I'd have to rewind and check everything out. But no, that was
I actually did think about that when these fights were going on. I'm like, this guy got the easiest card to cover.
Yeah, so next time I get the sign to me, make sure that's how it works out. But other than the finishes, it was a night where the fights that did go to the distance, I felt really bad for the judges and every single one of them. I just thought it was a very difficult night to score the fights. I do think that it was a very smart decision to have the lighter weight fighters, basically you're putting on like a WEC card, fight at elevation. Because, look, okay, the Alvi Rashad fight really stuck out as a really bad fight. But other than that, the guys really seem to keep energy. I think that really helped this fight card really kind of stand out as a very unique niche kind of fight card that nobody really expected to be good. I don't even, you know, there wasn't even a lot of buzz about it on social media until, you know, after the fact.
Yeah, I agree. And to your point, I thought, you know, because I covered the main card for this site, I thought the fights were really tough to score. I tended to agree, my scoring agreed with most of the decisions, but yeah, those were tough fights. Sean, did you catch any of the card?
I did. I haven't been able to catch up with the entire main card yet, but I did watch the prelims because I heard of all the fast finishes. usually in a card like this, I'll kind of skip the prelims if I can, but I heard about how quick they went, and I buzzed through them real quick, which was great. And I did see the Alvi Evans fight and the Moreno Pettis fight. I want to catch up with the rest of the main card, but haven't had a chance yet. But yeah, it was. And I'll say, maybe it was just me. I thought the Alvi Evans fight was pretty easily scored for Sam Alvi. And you know, it didn't really surprise me because, you know, having watched Rashad Evans for as long as we have, Rashad Evans doesn't really do much in fights. And you know, this was not all that unusual for him. You know, he kind of has a lot of hand movement. He's quick when he moves around. You know, he shoots in sometimes, but he doesn't really have a lot of offense other than the times where he gets those big knockouts. And if you watch those fights, you know, he doesn't throw a lot of punches, but the ones that land, you know, if he catches them right, obviously they're pretty devastating. And he seems to have not, in his last few fights, you know, he's not landing those shots anymore. And, you know, I hate to say he was never any good because, you know, that's the thing that MMA fans do when a guy, you know, gets up to this age. But it's one of those things where his style is now, you know, I don't know if it's caught up to him or what the deal is, but Rashad, you know, is not that much different now than he ever was. It's just that he's not getting enough offense in now, you know, whereas before, right. I guess he was getting enough to take decisions and now he's just not. So, that decision, I thought it was crazy that one of the judges scored it for Evans, honestly, but maybe that's just me. I may just need to rewatch it, but I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. So what do you think's next for Evans? I know his coach has come out and said that he still is a threat. He just needs to get that one win and, you know, that'll kind of get him going again. Do you agree, or obviously from what you said, it sounds like you disagree with that. But yeah, what do you think's next for Evans? Does the UFC give him another fight? Do we see him next in Bellator, or is this it for him? What do you think, Robert?
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that the UFC fight would give him another fight. Look, they're giving BJ Penn fights, and I think BJ Penn looks much worse than Rashad Evans looks at this point. So I put nothing past them having a big name. I hope they keep him under contract. I know that's probably not what he wants, but God, I do not want to see him in Bellator, you know, with the rematch against Rampage or something. I hate the way that in the UFC or in mixed martial arts in general that there's just no way. There's no way to end a career unless you're a bazillionaire because, you know, before Matt Hughes' accident, he was talking about fighting in Bellator. It's like the career slide, you know, these guys just can't end it. It's like, you know, it's bothersome. Look, other sports, I don't think we really get to see the legends just have such a decline because eventually they would get benched. But it seems like the UFC and all the mixed martial arts, they're going to keep rolling these guys out. But I don't want to see him fight again. But, yeah, probably we'll see him on another UFC card sometime later this year.
Yeah, Sean, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, when you look at Rashad Evans, I don't think I just don't know who they would put him out there against that he's going to get a win with. You know, I mean, his last two fights were Daniel Kelly and Sam Alvi. You know, who are you going to give this guy that he can beat? I mean, his last win was in 2013, for Pete's sakes. You know, I don't doubt that they'll put him out there again, but I just don't know who he's going to beat that's going to matter at all. I mean, it wouldn't really have mattered that much if he had beaten Alvey. But I don't know. I just don't know what kind of significance a Rashad Evans win is going to have, other than he wants to go out on a high note, you know. And it's a tough thing.
Yeah, it really is. And like you mentioned, you know, there really isn't a smooth transition into retirement for these guys, unless, you know, like Robert said, unless you're, you know, a gazillionaire, it, you know, makes things a lot easier. But yeah, I mean, Matt Hughes was wanting to take a fight in Bellator. I mean, what's it going to take for these guys to just officially, you know, hang them up? And now, you know, Vitor Belfort is, you know, lobbying for a fight now with Alvey. You know, this is a guy who just said, you know, he was done with fighting, and now all of a sudden, you know, he's back again. Not that anyone really needs to see that fight, because I don't see that being a very exciting fight either. So going back to UFC Fight Night 114, the Sergio Pettis fight, did you guys agree with the decision? Because I know some in the MMA media had it as a draw. So I was curious to see what you guys thought and how you had that fight scored. Robert, we'll start with you.
No, I thought it was scored correct. I think some of the Henry has been about like maybe a 10-8 round in the first round, because, you know, Moreno was so dominant in that round. But I thought it was correct. It was another one of those fights on that night, though. They were just kind of hard to score. Like, the guys were just so evenly matched up. But to me, there was no doubt whenever they announced that Pettis was going to be the winner. So I was kind of taken aback that there was some trepidation about the decision.
Yeah, Sean, did you feel the same way, or did you have that first round 10-8 for Moreno?
I did not have that round for the first round 10-8. I am not as liberal with the 10-8 rounds as a lot of people are. Even given the new scoring criteria, I did think that Pettis won the fight pretty clearly, even though it was close. You know, like Robert has said several times, you know, it was hard to be a judge in that fight, and apparently some of the other ones that I haven't seen yet. But yeah, I did think that Pettis won that one.
Yeah, I agree. I did not think that first round was a 10-8 round. I'm a lot like you, Sean, where I don't give out 10-8s liberally either. I definitely had that as a 10-9, and I thought it was a pretty clear unanimous decision for Pettis. So with the win, currently Pettis sits at number 4 in the rankings. I know Demetrius Johnson has a fight lined up with Ray Borg coming up. Does Pettis get the winner of that fight? Does he have to win one more? Where do you see Sergio Pettis going from here, Sean?
I don't see why they wouldn't give it to him. I mean, it's not as if you have a lot of up-and-comers at flyweight that are banging on the door to fight Demetrius Johnson. So, you know, you've got Pettis, who just won a fight in the main event of an FS1 card. It probably didn't do Boku ratings or anything, but, you know, Brandon Moreno was a legit guy. I don't see any reason not to give it to Pettis. You know, it's not as if he's going to be jumping the line, you know, unless they end up making that fight with TJ Dillashaw. But I don't see why not go ahead and give it to him.
Yeah, I agree. Robert, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's his fight. Because if you look at the rest of the rankings, I mean, DJ's gone through all those guys, so there's not really – and nobody's clamoring for – like, you know, nobody's clamoring for any of those rematches, so there's no real reason to put anyone else there. I will say this, though. I don't think he actually has a chance against Mighty Mouse right now, but I think we talked about it last week with Cyborg. Those dominant champions, the way it works is, you know, eventually – they're going to be old and we don't know it, and somebody's going to catch them. So I think if you keep kind of plugging away, somebody's going to be that guy that knocks them off the throne. So, and I think the UFC could do a lot worse than Sergio Pettis as kind of the face of that division. Look, in that fight on Saturday, he's an exciting fighter. For the first time, I thought he reminded me of like his brother with those taekwondo skills that he has. And I think he's a guy that kind of suffered from having too much hype at the beginning. But when you actually look at it, he is extremely skilled. And I think he'd be a very marketable fighter for the lighter weight classes.
Yeah, I agree. I've always been a fan of Sergio Pettis. So I would like to see him, get a shot for the title. I assume neither of you think Ray Borg is going to pull off the upset when he fights Mighty Mouse. Is that an accurate statement for both of you?
Correct.
That is accurate.
Okay. All right. I thought so. Do you think Pettis can give Mighty Mouse, somewhat of a fight, or do you think it's going to be one-sided like most of his fights are? Robert, go ahead.
Yeah, I think it'll be pretty one-sided. I think what we saw in that fight on Saturday was, the deficiencies in the ground game of Pettis. And Johnson lately, I mean, look what he did to Wilson Hayes, the way he kind of took him apart on the ground, and I think it would be a similar outcome.
Yeah, he did say, I think, when he was interviewed after the fight, that he does have some holes he needs to shore up before he does get that fight. So that's why I was just curious to see if you guys thought he might take another fight prior to taking a title fight against the winner of Borg Johnson, because I think he even admits it himself that he's not at the level he needs to be to in order to beat Mighty Mouse. Sean, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I mean, I think I think Johnson's going to kind of blow through Ray Borg, and then he would that Sergio Pettis that we saw on Saturday night, he will probably dispatch pretty easily too. But it wouldn't surprise me to see Pettis take another fight in the interim. You know, if you want to do like a has Dustin Ortiz fought Johnson yet? Remind me.
Good question. I don't think so.
I don't think
no,
so
Robert,
either.
Do you have
I mean,
any...
I wouldn't.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be mad at that fight. I think a Pettis Ortiz fight would be fun. Or if he wants to fight someone else in the top 10, Moreno, I think, was in the top 10 too. So if he wanted to take another fight like that, especially after how Dustin Ortiz looked on Saturday, I think that's fine. It could go either way. I don't think the outcome is going to depend on whether Pettis takes another fight in the meantime, but it certainly wouldn't hurt his chances.
Yeah, I agree. All right, we are late for our second break. So when we come back, I want to get into this talk about possibly adding some weight classes to MMA. So let's hear from Amazon first, and when we come back, we'll dive into that.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
All right. We are back. So there's been talk about the addition of new weight classes in MMA. But when Dana White was asked if the UFC would be open to adopting them, he basically shut it down quickly with a definitive no. I know the Association of Boxing Commissions and Combative Sports, which is the group that oversees commissions in North America, they approved four new weight classes. It looks like they approved a 165, 175, 195, and 225. So, Robert, what are your thoughts? Do you want to see more weight classes? Would you like to see less weight classes? Where do you stand on it?
Yeah, in general, I'm a fan of having more weight classes, so long as the fighters are more inclined to fight at a more natural weight. The part of the problem always is once you create that new weight class, you'll just see the same extreme weight cutting that you see now. But I like the proposal of weight classes. And if any, the counter argument sometimes is that from a promotional standpoint, maybe the UFC doesn't want so many titles and so many champions introduced that it gets diluted. But I think that argument has long gone by the wayside in this era where we just have interim champions just because we need a main event for a fight card. So I am definitely in favor. I still think we will have some of the problems that are just inherent to a weight cutting culture.
Yeah, Sean, what do you think?
Yeah, I am generally not for more weight classes. I do get the argument in favor. Like Robert said, you got guys that are doing the extreme weight cutting, but I do think also that it wouldn't really help just because you got guys, like you said, cutting to those new classes now, or whatever the case may be. If you were to add new weight classes, however, I'll say this much. I think 195 would not be a terrible idea. But I think anytime you add a weight class that is fewer than 10 pounds away from another one, I think it's too much. You know, then you end up with guys, you know, we've all seen in boxing, if you look at boxing at all, you see guys that are champions in, like, you know, 4, 5, 6 weight classes, whatever the case may be. I don't know if it's really that many, but several weight classes. And it's because they're 3, 4 pounds apart, you know. And I think that when you get to that point, you know, it just gets to be silly. And I think if you're looking at weight classes like 175, where it's 5 pounds away from welterweight, you know, what are we even doing here? You know, if you're really going to restructure the weight classes, I think you'd look at the weight classes as a whole now and just say, okay, we've got weight classes every 10 pounds or every 12 pounds or whatever the case may be. But I don't think you want to shove a weight class in there just because, you know, you've got guys like Johnny Hendricks, who is too small for middleweight and too big for welterweight. You know, that's just it's bad luck. You know, if it's bad luck for one or two guys, you know, they either got to decide whether they want to go up and down, and that's just kind of the breaks. But I don't think what you want to do is kind of shove those things in there just for the sake of having more weight classes. So I do kind of come down on the side of Dana White in that case.
Yeah, you know, it's a hard argument, because, and I don't mean to be wishy-washy with my answer here, but I understand the logic behind adding more weight classes. Obviously, you know, fighter health and the extreme weight cutting is a big issue. And it seems the more we know about it, the more, you know, precautions, you know, they're trying to take. But, you know, if we went with less weight classes, now you have more weight cutting, but you might get people fighting in their true weight class as well. So, yeah, it's a tough argument. I agree. I don't see a need to bring in a weight class that is literally 5 pounds off from, you know, say welterweight, you know, 170. You know, that doesn't make any sense to me. But as far as the weight cutting, do you guys see any, you know, anything coming down the road that will, you know, prevent fighters from the extreme weight cutting? Is there anything that can be done about it first? Let's start there, Robert. What do you think?
No, as long as there's not like this unified body in every state, I don't think that there's going to be any meaningful change. I think promoters will just go to a state that'll fit what they need to do. I support the way California handles it, but I know a lot of fighters have said that they don't like that, you know, where you sort of had to be registered into a weight class and the early weigh-ins like 2 weeks before or whatever. So I don't think that until you have that governing body that just governs everybody. Look, this year we adopted the, you know, the new unified rules of MMA, and at the beginning of every broadcast we have to be informed whether or not this is a state that adopted the quote unified rules. So I think there's a lot more red tape to deal with before we get to a place where weight cutting has truly been reformed.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I know it makes me laugh every time I hear that before every event. Sean, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think Robert's exactly right. You know, if you don't have consistent regulations from state to state or country to country, for that matter, you're never going to make any kind of headway. You know, it would have to be something self-regulating that the UFC does, you know, and you know, I don't see that happening. It would be, I mean, that's an enormous headache, because it would have to involve monitoring guys' weights over the course of, you know, their careers. I mean, it's not something that's going to be like, okay, you know, you decide if you're a middleweight or a welterweight and there's no moving, you know, and it's like, you would have to kind of, you would almost have to have doctors on board too that would say, that would do like evaluations on guys and say, well, this guy should fight at this weight or this guy should fight at this. And it's, I can't imagine that happening. At least internally with the UFC, you know. So until there is one governing body, you know, that oversees all of MMA weight classes, I think we know how likely that is. I don't see anything meaningful happening in the way of curbing weight cutting. And the whole unified rules thing is insanity. It drives me nuts. Like the same way you guys talked about it, it's just silly.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts, and yeah, I don't see anything really coming of it either. So it looks like we have another caller, so let's bring them on here. 845, you are on. State your name and where you're calling from. 845. Going once. 845, are you there? All right, we'll put you on hold here. All right. Okay, so where were we here? So it looks like besides Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series, we don't have another UFC event until it looks like a Fight Night card with Volkov and Struve headlining September 2nd. We do have a Bellator card, looks like Bellator 182, which is coming up on Friday, August 25th, and then obviously the Mayweather-McGregor fight on August 26th. So with a little bit of a break here, is there anything either of you are planning to get caught up on that might be still on the DVR that you've been meaning to watch but just haven't had time? Or are you just going to take a break? For me, personally, this gives me a chance to get caught up on both WWE and New Japan. I've fallen behind quite a bit here on both those shows. So I'm excited to get caught up on those two shows. Robert, what do you have planned for the next week and a half, 2 weeks here?
Yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to the MMA decompression kind of happening. I'm with you. I as much as we complain about there being too much MMA, there's definitely too much pro wrestling to consume on a weekly basis. So I'm looking forward to SummerSlam, though, being sort of a standalone weekend this year. Last year, when you had SummerSlam, NXT TakeOver, and UFC 202 within the matter of like 48 hours, I was so done with any form of combat sports by the time that next Monday rolled around. And I think it's smart that the UFC has just cleared out the way for Mayweather McGregor, good or bad, they'll just kind of be able to wash their hands of it. So yeah, I'm gonna probably a lot of pro wrestling, and then you know what, get excited for the NFL season upcoming. I haven't really checked out my fantasy lineups to see what I'm gonna do there. So that's probably what's gonna go on.
Yeah, that's a good point. I haven't done that either. Sean, what do you have? What are your plans for this this break here?
Yeah, I'm looking more of the same. I need to catch up on the G1 Climax tournament. I'm about a week behind. I think my last show I watched was like July 29th, so I got several to catch up on there. And those things are, I love G1, but man, those shows are long. We've got those. I need to, I'm about knee deep into hype for my Eagles for football, so I'm getting into that. Getting excited for football season. So yeah, it'll be nice to take a little bit of a break from MMA for a little while. And also, I like when they have these breaks just because it helps me get excited for the next event. You know, a lot of times when they have these cards week after week after week, it kind of gets to feel like it's not special anymore. I like it. You know, I don't want to be the old man, but like it makes me, I remember the days when you only had a card every couple of months. And, it would just build and build and build, even if it was just me that felt the building. I always enjoyed, when that weekend finally rolled around, it just hit a fever pitch and you're ready for, Chuck Liddell and Randy Couture number three or whatever. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to taking a little bit of a break and getting excited to see what comes up next.
Yeah, I remember, back then, I remember just I couldn't wait for, I think it was the Matt Hughes BJ Penn fight, and
yes.
it was during the time when you only had one pay-per-view every so often, and that was really something to look forward to. Now granted, they also didn't have the fighters that they have on the roster now, but yeah, that was fun looking forward to those big fights. And it just seemed like every pay-per-view they were like just huge fights that made a big difference. So anyway, with that, we're going to take time out here for our final break. And when we come back, we'll get some final thoughts and wrap things up.
Thank you for being a PW Torch Livecast listener. As of mid-July 2017, the PW Torch Livecast lineup has undergone some changes. My shows have moved to a new feed, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available at Podcast One, or just search Wade Keller in your podcast app. But there's tons of great content every week, including Saturdays at 6 Eastern, the new Deep Dive with Rich Fan, covering a single topic in professional wrestling in depth. Join him live with phone calls at 6 Eastern every Saturday. Sunday nights at 8 Eastern, it is Wrestling Night in America with Pat McNeil and Greg Parks, where they focus on the supercards, the big events coming up in pro wrestling, or review the latest one. That's at 8 Eastern, or following a live pay-per-view, if there's a live pay-per-view on that Sunday. And then check out MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans every Monday night at 7 Eastern, hosted by Mike Hisko and other MMA Torch contributors. It's a chance for fans of both pro wrestling and MMA who share that in common to talk about the latest happenings in the world of mixed martial arts. Tuesdays, it's the best of PW Torch Livecast, a handpicked episode from our history that gives you a chance to catch up on a show you might have missed back in our earlier years. And then the PW Torch Nostalgia Hour with Jim Valley is back. It used to be called Saturday Morning Wrestling. Now it's Wednesdays at 5 Eastern. He takes your live calls and interviews some of the big names from pro wrestling's past. And then Thursday nights following GFW Impact, it's Mike McMahon and Andrew Stochak with a recap of the just concluded Impact Wrestling show on Pop TV. So as soon as Impact goes off the air in the United States on Pop TV, join Mike and Andrew live right here at PWTorchLivecast.com. They'll be taking your calls. That's the new lineup of the PW Torch Livecast. Great diverse mix of shows with a great group of hosts. Keep listening and keep spreading the word and give us a 5-star rating over at iTunes with some kind comments in the listener comment section about which shows you like and why. That's PW Torch Livecast, new lineup. Thanks for listening, everybody.
So I couldn't help notice when we were talking about what we were going to do on this little mini break here, neither one of you mentioned you were going to tune into that Bellator 182 event. So just out of curiosity, am I the only one that watches these fights? And not just because I have to cover it for the website, but is Bellator even on either of your radars, Sean? Let's start with you.
No, it is not. it takes something special to get Bellator on my radar.
Okay, so you weren't one plunking down the money to watch Vandalay fight Sonnen.
No, I was not. You know what I did that night was I watched Twitter because I knew that weird things were going to happen. So I just watched Twitter and waited for the gifts and waited for the reports of weird things. And sure enough, I was not disappointed.
Yeah, weird things definitely did happen. So, Robert, what are your thoughts on Bellator? Have you ever watched it? Is it something that, you know, you might look into, you know, if you have, you know, time on your hands? Or is it just something that's not even on your radar either?
No, I watch a healthy amount of Bellator. I popped down money for that pay-per-view, and I was thoroughly entertained by it, mostly because of the weirdness, not necessarily because of the quality of fights. Look, when two guys knock each other out and you have the Rocky II finish in a fight, that's some good stuff. But, you know, you say Bellator, to me, they're like something that I can just leave in my DVR, and if I find out something's good, I can check them out, or, you know, I'll check them out if I remember they're on. They're just not – I like what Bellator is doing. I like some of their signings. They're just not top of mind. You said Bellator 182. I'm here Googling, well, who the heck is fighting on that card? I like Bellator, but – Let's be honest. They're a number two, and they're a very far number two, and they just blew their whole load with that last pay-per-view, so they've got nothing coming up for a while.
That's true. You know, I'm the same way how you are with Bellator. You know, if there's nothing else on, you'll watch on your DVR. I do that with the PFL. If there's nothing else on, I'll put that on too. So have you guys checked out PFL at all? Sean?
Yeah, I checked out that one with the with the NASCAR with the ring.
Yeah.
That was a decent card. It was just, again, weird. It was like we were in an MMA time machine where you're seeing a fight with outside with rain coming down with, you know, NASCAR drivers, you know, giving their opinion on the fights. It's like, wait, hasn't MMA progressed past this? But I could, outside of John Finch, I really couldn't tell you anything about it.
Yeah, it was quite the spectacle. All right. Well, with that, that'll do it for this episode of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. Sean, go ahead and plug anything you have going on that you'd like to share with us.
Yeah, nothing much going on my way. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at Sean Ennis, just my name. My name, S-H-A-W-N-E-N-N-I-S. I don't tweet about politics. It's mostly just MMA, pro wrestling, and Philly sports. So if you don't like Philly sports, just mute me during the Eagles games.
And Robert.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter, Rob M. Vallejos, R-O-B-M-V-A-L-L-E-J-O-S. I've got a new column going up for MMA Torch sometime later this week that I'm finishing up, which details why I believe the UFC getting involved in boxing would be a terrible idea.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, absolutely. And you can follow me on Twitter at FightChampBlog. And that should do it. So for Sean and Robert, my name is Mike Rocky, and we will be back next week for another episode of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject. And it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and Sure Talk contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Cutter Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the SE Editor format of the Weight Cutter Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.
Yeah.